This song is not a rebel song.
Shall we play a game?
I am Sammy Daddy.
Many students were killed. Few right now. I'm very angry.
He would rather the poor were poorer, yeah, yeah. Provided the rich were less rich.
Naughty, naughty, we like the party.
Automobile?
Oh, Rick, to think that I may never see you again.
I think you did it on purpose because you know I've got a runny bottom.
I'm Kurt Loder, this is MTV News.
Justine, Justine!
But this is Miami, pal.
I'm not going without it.
Let's have a Play-Doh party.
Show me wax on, wax off.
I'm Spun Counter Guy. Thanks for dropping by the In the Corner Back by the Woodpile podcast, and specifically the second edition of our 80s look back series, A Fluorescent Decade on a Hill. On this episode, Judy got a monkey from her parents, Ultima changes the kid's life, and the imaginary and real adventures in a Tennessee woods. But first, the Wham School of English as a Second Language.
Do you want to work?
So you came from Mexico to America in what year?
1982.
And you couldn't speak English, is that correct?
Yes.
ESL did not exist. And the principal at the school that I went to, all the kids were white, and the principal was Hispanic, with my luck. And she was like, well, you're just going to have to learn English the way I did. Go into class and learn. So just kind of was thrown in and, of course, didn't pass.
So you had to stay another year?
I had to stay a year behind.
So who became your English tutor?
When I started, it was like so close to the end of school year. They didn't do anything. They said, you know, you could use the summer to learn English. There weren't many kids around our area where we lived. And so MTV was huge. It had just come out. The man on the moon had landed on MTV.
Yeah.
And so I started watching MTV, and I started started learning like the words of music. And I remember the first song that I could fully sing in English, that's when I knew I had it, was Oh Sherry by Steve Perry, which, by the way, like many, many years later, like about 10 years ago, I actually saw the words of the song and I knew none of them.
How do you mean?
Well, I made up my own words. The words that I thought he was saying were not the words that he actually said.
So you had told me there was a particular English speaker on MTV that motivated you, I guess, to learn even more using his handsome ways.
I think it was just his smooth style and those short yellow shorts he used to wear. Of course, I'm talking about George Michael.
And you thought he was straight?
Of course he was straight in the 80s. He was even married.
Really?
Twice. I think he was married twice.
Oh, I never knew that.
Yeah, he married that girl that came out in I Want Your Sex video. But yeah, I mean, that was the year Wham came out and they were big. And so I was still learning a lot of English, but like I grabbed onto their songs and their music and I started learning from that.
Which song in particular do you remember?
Like, I remember that Wham rap.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was early, before
that
they... Now, I guess Mr. Ridgely?
Andrew Ridgely. Well, I, in my humble opinion, thought that he was Wham, not as much as George Michael. I thought they had this, like, great, awesome friendship, and I didn't have very many friends, and I kind of liked that idea that you have like one really outgoing person and the other one's kind of a little bit shy and a little bit not so much in the front, but you stick together kind of friendship.
Right. So in the end, George Michael, was he doing most of the work, or?
Yeah, I mean, George Michael was, well, now that I know all of the history.
Yeah. I've seen your VHS tapes, the ones that your loving husband ordered from weird countries.
Yeah, some odd. I can't even remember where those videos came from. And I had books. At the time, it didn't seem like they broke up. The first song that I remember where it was just George Michael mostly was Careless Whisper. With the chains hanging down and him like swinging off of them. So romantic, so sexy. I mean, that motivated me to learn the lyrics and to learn about them. And it also helped me whenever, you know, school would be in way. It helped me connect with people that also liked.
So you found the one other Wham fan in your town?
There were lots of Wham fans. Okay. I mean, y'all might want to be like, now you might want to say like, who? George Michael? Wham? I never heard of that. But you know you love them. You know you had his posters up. I'm never gonna dance again. Guilty feet have got no rhythm. Though it's easy to pretend. I know you're not a fool.
You kind of have another connection with George Michael. Didn't he date a guy that had an art gallery in your town?
No, not in my town. For a long time, George Michael lived in Dallas. He dated a gallery owner from Dallas.
Oh, okay. So, I thought he was in Lubbock for some reason. But.
Oh, God. Would there be an art gallery in Lubbock?
I've never been. I don't know.
That'd be like, would there be an art gallery in...
My hometown?
Your hometown?
No.
I don't think there's even an art supply store in Lubbock, other than Michael's.
No, if you want to buy a Bocifa sign, we got that in my town.
Yeah, they broke up a long time ago.
Was it because of his indiscretions in the bathroom and parks?
No.
And so?
Okay. No, I think that happened, and you know, there was a time when you didn't really hear about George Michael. Mm-hmm. And then he came out with that album. It's when he did that come out song, Let's Go Outside. Let's go outside. Let's go outside. In the sunshine. I know you want to, but you can't say yes. But then that he used that as a way to say that that was the incident that allowed him to come out.
I didn't know that was about. I have a house mix of that. It's great.
Yeah, it's a great song, and it's like, let's go outside so everybody can see us.
Oh, okay.
We don't have to hide. And
Now I know why people give me the funny looks when I would play that song in a club, in a straight club. I had no idea. I just thought they thought I had good taste in music. I got a lot of phone numbers that night. But
not from the gals. No, when we went to see George Michael in 2007, Arizona, hot as blazes. And we endured it. He did that song and started with like the urinals, shady looking bathrooms, and then like a whole bunch of police officers came out dancing. And then of course George Michael came out dressed as a police officer, and that was like the it point for me. That was the point where I just lost it. I was like, I love you.
So if he ever like goes back to being straight, would you submit application?
I would submit very many. I would sell David.
Your husband.
Not so much Leah.
Yeah,
just David.
You can sell him into white slavery. Yes.
And Hugo.
Your dog.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Hugo. Yeah. Hugo's my baby. I would get rid of them both, sell them out, and get like complete reconstructive plastic surgery, have that body that I never did have. Try to like get leg attachments or something so I'm a little bit taller. And I would go for it. But I mean, even if he just wants to have a child, I would be his beacon of hope. Yeah, I mean, I think he's like a really gifted person.
Yeah.
And I think it's just like a lot of the really gifted people, tortured soul.
So recently,
you had a George Michael moment.
I did. It was exciting. Leah's my daughter. She was 4 at the time. So I played her some music. I showed her a picture of George Michael, and I said, that's my boyfriend. And so...
Did she not think, like, but I have a daddy already? Or...
No, she doesn't really... I guess she didn't really think about that. Now she would say that. But back then, she didn't say anything. But so we're at Nordstrom's Shoe Rack, or Rack Shoe, or whatever it's called. And I'm looking for shoes for her. And this George Michael song comes up, Careless Whisper. And then Leah goes, Mommy, Mommy, that's your boyfriend. And I looked at her and I was like, yeah, that is my boyfriend. And she's like, his name's George, right? And I said, yes. And she goes, you know what would be amazing? If we could invite your boyfriend George to your birthday party. And I was like, yes, that would be amazing.
Was there anybody else in the store?
There were other people around us. And there was a woman with her kid next to us. And she just kind of gave me like this like horrified look like.
You're delusional.
Yeah. Like, this is really disgusting. And your daughter thinks that's your boyfriend. And he's going to come to your birthday party.
As my friend, you've done a lot for me in my life. But if I could get to where George Michael could pop out of a cake wearing the outfit he wore in, is it Faith?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What could that get me?
Besides, one thing for sure, even if you were arrested for killing somebody, you would never go to jail.
Oh, that's
I
right.
would go to jail for you.
Thanks.
But I would let you live in my house for the rest of my life, and I would clean your shoe if you ever stepped in human poop.
As it turns out.
If you heard the initial episode of A Fluorescent Decade on a Hill, you'll recall my sister complaining that she never got jelly shoes, a ventriloquist dummy, or a live monkey. Well, an uncle of ours' family did get the latter, and so he and our cousin Judy relayed that experience.
First of all, which country were you in?
Well, Mozambique was the country where we had the monkey.
We got her thinking she was a boy, so we named her Max, and then we found out she was a girl, we changed it to Maxine.
How'd you find out she was a girl?
Just kind of noticed those things.
Okay. Like it was wearing pink or it got grumpy once a month or something? So, did it live in the house?
No. She lived in a cage outside with the dogs. We bought her. Someone came to our house to sell her, so we bought her for $4. Me and my brother split the cost.
So, it was your idea? You wanted a monkey?
Yeah. I mean, they just randomly showed up at our house, but we thought that was pretty awesome.
And what did you think of the monkey?
Yeah, we thought it was kind of cool to have a monkey. You know, we don't know where the monkey came from. It could have been an orphan, or they could have just snatched it from the mother. We're not sure, but she was very young.
Okay, so it's like the natives, people,
yeah.
Sold it to you. Okay.
Yeah, they saw an opportunity to get some money, so they just knocked at our gate and offered a monkey.
Now, I understand you did your homework with the monkey?
Yeah.
You were homeschooled, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you got in the cage with the monkey?
Mm-hmm.
Were you, like, real little?
No, I was, how old was I, like 13, 14? I was a teenager. See, the cage is a pretty big cage.
And did the monkey help you with the homework?
She would usually sit on my shoulder and pick through my hair and look for scabs or bugs or whatever she could find to eat off
Lice,
of me.
Whatever, you know.
So, eventually, did the monkey get in the house?
She got in accidentally one time, yes. And she chewed up my mom's Bible, as well as ate some fruit off the table.
We were not happy. And I don't know why she grabbed Arla's Bible, but she...
Maybe she
grabbed
was
that.
Atheist.
Yeah, I yelled at her, and she showed her teeth
she
to me.
She never liked him after that day. Yeah.
Really?
She had a grudge against him. She really did.
Did you take her to town with you?
No, I take her out like on the leash in her yard and walk her around. Uh-huh. But I never took her like outside of our yard.
Did you have a dog?
Yeah, we had 4 dogs.
Did she get along with the dogs?
Yeah, she loved the dogs. She'd pick their fleas and ticks off of them, and she'd ride on their back.
Yeah, she'd ride, hop on her back and ride.
Okay.
And the dogs, that. In turn, love eating her poop.
Oh, awesome. And so what ultimately happened to Maxine?
So we came back to America, originally planning to go back to Africa, mm-hmm. and came back to America, left her with some friends to take care of her, and they came out and found her dead one morning with some sort of bite on her. They think she got bit by a snake.
Oh, that's too bad. Were you pretty upset?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. One of our dogs had puppies, And Max really loved the puppies. She would try to be a mother to them. And
oh, really?
Would hug them.
She loved the kittens, too. She loved the cats even more than dogs. She would grab them around their necks and just, like, hold on to them. Aww. I don't think they really liked it, but she did.
So she wanted to be a mother.
Yeah, I think so.
Did you ever think about getting her a boyfriend?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. So would you recommend my sister get a monkey?
I probably would not recommend it, no.
Because?
Because they're still wild animals. They're not really meant to be in captivity, and they're much happier out in the wild.
The 1980s were a coming of age for video games, both in the arcade and at home via consoles and the finally affordable home computers. Games like Crystal Caverns, Zork, and King's Quest allowed lovers of the fantasy genre, without enough friends to play Dungeons and Dragons, to be the hero. One of the most successful and longest-running computer game franchises was the Ultima series, which began in 1981. A modern-day software developer told me about how his entry through the infamous Moongate changed his life as a kid and still affects him to this day.
I really don't remember where I was, but I think we were on vacation somewhere. I played plenty of video games back in the 80s, and my mom just found this game, Ultima 5, and looked really neat and had this box art with three black hooded figures sort of standing above some sort of hero character, so I guess she thought it looked cool. Just had no idea what it was and gave it to me. I had no idea what it was. Of course, at the time, I was mostly playing on my Apple IIc. So it was an Apple game. And I was really amazed by it. I don't think I'd played any kind of role-playing game. This one just blew me out of the water with just how deep it was. Obviously, the graphics were pretty rudimentary back then, but the storyline was amazing. There was politics and intrigue and virtues and anti-virtues, and there was just this whole history of this world, Britannia, that just really got me hooked in. It actually came with a really thick book called The Book of Lore, and I studied that thing for months and practically had it memorized. So.
What was in the Book of Lore?
It was basically the history of the world, and it had a bestiary and details about different weapons and armor. It was basically the user instruction. It was written in a way that it was more like a history book. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't that thick. It was maybe like 30 pages. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was kind of like the most in-depth user manual I'd ever seen, and it wasn't really written like, you know, press this button to do this. It was like, you know, what is a short sword versus a long sword versus a, you know, what do these spells do?
So that made you get back into Ultima 1 through 4.
Right, right, yeah. Well, I think, as I'm trying to remember, I believe a friend of mine had Ultima 4, probably pirated.
Uh-huh. and did you hear that, Richard?
No, I think a friend of mine loaned me Ultima 4, and I got into that a little bit more. And that game was actually more directly related to the virtues, and that was a lot more straightforward than Ultima 5. Mm-hmm. So 4 was just, you know, they laid out the 8 virtues and you have to do this to get that and this to get that. It was very, very straightforward. You know, in retrospect, that probably would have been a better introduction because 5 was a little bit confusing. It was very ambiguous about what you had to do.
Uh-huh.
And you could do some evil stuff if you wanted to. It would have some negative consequences, but if you had to do it, you had to do it.
So. Obviously, thou shalt not steal or pirate was not one of the virtues.
It was, actually.
Oh, really? I fell on deaf ears.
Honesty, or, yeah.
That's great.
I said a friend did it. No, I don't remember what order. I don't remember if I played Ultima 6 after that, but at some point I went back and bought a collection of 1 through 3,
oh, okay.
Which may or may not have come with a Calibeth, which was Richard Garriott's first game in the series, sort of a pre-Ultima 1. Mm-hmm. So I think some people call Ultima 0, which to me it was kind of like a prototype of Ultima 1. It had all of the elements, but it was much, much smaller, much shorter.
Okay. And you've completed that?
Yeah, I've completed, I want to say I've completed all of them. No, I haven't completed Ultima 2. That's
really?
The one of all of them, because that one is incredible. incredibly long. It's just, it takes forever, and I just have never gotten around to it, but...
Let's talk about the virtues first. Did that affect you in real life?
Absolutely. Not that I don't think that I would be virtuous without that.
Were your parents heathens or something? I'm
just kidding. Well, I'll tell you what really affected me. All the games from Ultima 4 onward have this idea of the virtues being combinations of truth, love, and courage. And the one virtue that really hit close to home for me, and I guess... probably because I was a shy child and I probably had a little bit of self-doubt here and there, is that one of the biggest virtues was humility. Mm. And even when I was, you know, fairly certain that I was the smartest person I knew, it kind of taught me to, you know, don't go around bragging about it.
Right,
that,
so. Right.
the way I talk to friends about stuff like that, I would always... keep humility in mind for some reason. I don't know why that spoke to me so much.
But. That's interesting because I think all the great philosophers and historians, you know, point out that myth to every culture is kind of their compass, their moral compass. And American culture used to be Judaism and Christianity, and that's kind of faded. But like movies such as Star Wars or certain TV shows and books, maybe The Lord of the Rings or the Narnia books, they've kind of become our myths, so to speak. So maybe Ultima might have been your moral compass.
Yeah, and definitely the storylines have sort of shaped my ideas of what you know, what types of video games I like to play, what types I would like to build, those sorts of things. There were so many different interwoven storylines in there. It started out very, very simple, good versus evil, but then it was, what is exactly good, or is it you know, do the ends sometimes justify the means, and then. With Ultima 6, it was kind of turned completely on its head, where this whole other race of gargoyles had thought that the main character was actually evil. And then they had a whole different set of virtues. So that was kind of interesting to see, wait a minute, this isn't necessarily the only way to think. There's this whole other culture that had these different virtues. And they end up, both cultures, the humans and the gargoyles, end up clashing, but then kind of realizing that neither of them is really evil. They're just... different.
Different. Oh, okay.
So that was very profound.
Wow,
you know?
That's complicated for a game.
Yeah. Every one of them seems to start with you're at home, and either you get lured out or called outside the house, and then there's like a circle of stones and a moon gate appears, and you're in a different world. And I've frequently looked out into my backyard and kind of looking, is there a circle of stones out there anywhere? And just kind of went, especially in thunderstorms, because that seems to be what happens. So I thought, and sometimes when I'm in a new place, you know, if I'm on vacation or something, renting a house, I'll kind of look in the backyard and see if there's like a circle of stones back there, just out of curiosity.
You were saying the other day that there was certain music sometimes you would listen to while you would play Ultima. Do you remember what it was?
Yeah.
Is it going to be lame?
Kind of embarrassing, yeah.
The Pointer Sisters.
It's funny how you kind of know. It's funny how you kind of make these weird associations. For some reason, when I was playing Ultima 6, I think, I was listening to a lot of Fishbone.
Oh, yeah.
And so whenever I hear a crazy Fishbone song, I always think about Ultima 6, and vice versa.
All together free.
All together now.
All together free. United.
What were some of your favorite moments, or some moments that you'll just always remember in Ultima?
Gosh, there's so many. I would say in Ultima 5, the sort of the main antagonists were... supposedly the embodiment of, what was it, hate, cowardice, and falsehood. Every once in a while when you entered a town, one of those three would be there, and everyone in the town would suddenly be either lying to you all the time, or attacking you, or something like that. They would just kind of invade, and then if you ever managed to get, you know, run into that Shadow Lord, as they were called, they would attack you and send you to this world where you could not get away. And I think at one time I actually defeated one, which you're not I don't think you're supposed to be able to do. But
really?
Yeah, I mean, it came back after that, but I was like, wow, I actually beat it. Usually they just kill you.
It's like a bug in the system or something.
Yeah, or maybe you're supposed to be able to do that. I don't know. But I would say this in Ultima 6, which is the next one, the beginning was really cool. Before that, the hero would always be transported from Earth to Britannia or Sosaria and some of the earlier ones, and just kind of find himself with one of his friends, like they'd been called for him to appear. In this one, it was actually a trick. He was tricked into going through this moon gate from the gargoyles. So he's immediately seized and put on a slab, and they're about to kill him. Oh. And he gets rescued, of course, at the last second. But that was kind of a very interesting beginning. And when you first turn on the game, you're just like thrust into the action like that. So that was really cool.
As far as you know, was there any Easter eggs?
Oh, yeah. There were lots. Origin had lots of other games. Wing Commander was one of their other very popular games. So I remember, I believe it was Ultima 7, there was a spaceship in one of the fields.
Uh-huh. Oh, really?
Right outside of the main town.
Like a crash spaceship?
Yeah, from Wing Commander, cool. Which is a space game. And there was a race called the Kilrathi, and they said, oh yeah, there was some creature that came out saying something about Kilrathi, and we don't know who Rathi is, but...
That's funny.
So yeah, there were little things like that.
But you didn't find like a secret chamber that was had a secret message from Richard and Garrett?
There may have been. I can't remember right now. I mean, there were a lot of little secret hidden passageways. Mm-hmm. One of the big things that people... I never understand this, but the people have a big hang-up about these being immersive worlds, and it kind of started with Ultima 7 when you could actually make bread by going to the fields and cutting wheat.
Oh, really?
And, you know, grinding it into flour and then, you know, turning it into... And, I mean, you could cook it and all this stuff, and it was just very, very immersive. And so later on in Ultima 9, they were very clear about the fact that, yes, you can make bread in this one. And they're like, why does that matter?
The Ultima series was developed by Austin, Texas software game and company named Origin, which was headed by a man named Richard Garriott, who looked suspiciously like one of the main characters in the game.
In the mythology of Ultima, it really starts with this fellow, presumably Richard, being on Earth and stumbling across this moon gate that brings him to the world that was then called Sosaria. And he becomes... I guess he was from the British Isles, and he becomes sort of lord of this realm, and they call him Lord British. And so that was just sort of his persona. And so every game from Ultima 1 onward has, you know, Lord British is sort of the king of the realm, and your main character can go to him for healing and advice and things like that. Of course, by Ultima 5, he gets kidnapped to the underworld.
So Richard Garriott is the guy who created...
Right.
And so he presumably is Lord British.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, and in fact, in some of them, I think they actually had a scan of his face.
And so you eventually met Lord British.
Right, yeah. Well,
was it a dark dungeon?
Right. No, I mean, if you back up a few years, actually, right after I graduated from college, I moved to Austin, Texas from Nashville with the thought that I would like to apply to work at Origin. Initially, I just got a job at a software consulting firm just so I could pay the rent. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, my wife got a job at a company in the same building as Origin.
Oh, wow.
So at least I got to go in and take a look. But before I got a chance to actually apply for a job, the .com bubble burst. Uh-huh. Everyone lost their job. Everything was horrible, and I moved back to Nashville. So,
did when your wife worked in this building, did she see Lord British and?
I don't know if she actually saw him.
What's the other guy's name? The bald guy.
Starlong.
Starlong. Yeah,
I'm sure she did. Probably didn't recognize him, but but she did. She did note that there were a lot of people going in and out. You know, in their PJs and it's typical tech environment.
Okay.
And people all hours of the day and night. So I did meet him finally this year, earlier this year, at the Game Developer Conference in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So he was down on the floor showing off a new game, Shroud of the Avatar, which was actually a Kickstarter game that I helped fund. And so I basically did an interview of him, and the next day, Star Long as well. Star actually walked me through Shroud of the Avatar. Of course, I knew all about it, but I was just kind of asking questions if it were an interview. And they were really nice to talk to me. And I think I probably told them that it had been a lifelong dream to meet them both. So. Yeah, I actually have an idea for a game that is actually kind of like the sequel to Ultima 9. So I'm just kind of keeping it safe. So I might bring it up at some point when we have an opportunity to do an original game. And
if the powers that be are listening and you're shy of ideas for Ultima 10.
Right, yeah. I might have to do a spiritual successor to Ultima 9. So I don't know.
Out in the woods tonight, you probably will be thrilled. Don't go out in the woods tonight, you probably will be killed. There's a friend.
All that said, to any kid who's played video games such as Ultima or read a fantasy book like Lord of the Rings, no woods ever looks like a real woods anymore. If you study it in the right slant of light, you'll see lurking goblins, demonic trees, and flirty fairies.
I grew up playing in the woods, like between the ages of, like, I don't know, 7 to 12, 13 or something like that. I spent so much time tromping through the woods. We had all these trails figured out and mapped up in our heads, and we had names for things and areas, you know, that we just made up based on whatever, I don't know, kind of felt like or looked like, you know. It was like, I remember there was like one little area that, it was probably no bigger than, I don't know, 5 feet square, actually. But to us, it was about the size of this room, you know, like 20 foot by 30 foot or something like that is what it felt like when I was a kid. We called it Eagle Rock because there were rocks around it. And there was this one rock that looked like, I don't know, kind of like it had a beak or something.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it is probably nothing. It's like a ditch. You know what I mean? It's probably what it is. I remember going back with a friend of mine from up the street, a real heavyweight kid who was basically obese. Mm-hmm. He's one of those kids that has a kind of smell about him, you know?
Yeah.
But he was so funny. Uh-huh. Guy was the biggest smartass on the planet and just, like, sharp as a tack with that, you know? And so we had a really good time. We'd go through the woods. We'd get some warrior gear together, you know? He was getting into, like, Ultima on the Commodore 64 at the time. Uh-huh. So we would get some fake swords together, might be just some nice sticks, you know. If we got really lucky, he would score like some saw blades or something from his dad, you know.
That like, things will hurt,
yeah,
man.
Like a rotary blades, and we'd throw them like shuriken, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Like crawl?
Like crawl, you know, but you don't want that coming back to you because try to catch that and it's going to hurt. But
ouch! I mean,
yeah, seriously. So we would go back and we would go looking for, you know, baddies to fight. You know, and it might be like a little nice crop of weeds of a certain sort. You know, and we'd call them something. We would just chop them all down or something. Or maybe there's this rogue tree that's sitting over there.
It's evil.
It really had no place being right over there, and it would. Consider it to be a dragon or something. We'd start throwing our saw blades at it or something, which I'd never do now because, you know, I've grown trees from saplings. So, like, the idea of hacking one down for no reason. So, yeah, just to be a jerky kid. It, what's funny now is I went back to that area a few years ago because I can look on Google Earth and look at that area, and it's still overgrown. But I know what's around it, and there's context for all the things around. There's like a rock quarry over there. There's actually like some kind of state pen that's not far away from there. There's like a.
Can you imagine his kids run across an escapee?
Yeah, I wouldn't know what to do with that. But
he'd know what to do with you.
I remember hearing rumors that there might be like someone was trying to grow weed back in this one area, and I remember we were looking at that. We didn't even know what it really was. You know what I mean? And I remember that sort of.
So it was a tree full of joints, roll of joints,
something like that. I have a nice memory of us finding a very climbable tree in these woods. And one day we found out if we climbed to a certain height, you could actually see downtown Nashville
really?
From the top of this tree.
Wow.
And we got all the way up there and we said, wow, it's amazing. That's where all the grown-ups go and work every day and get in their horrible traffic, and they come home and they bitch about the jobs that they hate, you know? It's like, isn't it
it's
nice?
It's like Mordor.
Isn't it nice to not have to worry about that? Yeah, it's like Mordor. It's like, It's sad that there was no Batman building back then, because, you know, the eye of Sauron would fit perfectly.
It would. I didn't think about that.
One time, me and a small group of friends, we were tromping around in our woods. They're our woods, we thought. And we came across this kind of barn, and we're like, well, let's go explore this barn. And we start messing around in this barn, and we find some stuff. So, you know, somebody is storing some stuff in this barn. Somebody basically owns it. Of course, back then, as a child, we didn't have any idea of what it meant to own things, and you work, and you pay for things, and it's your property, and you don't want anybody messing with it. Therein lies the problem. We started messing with this stuff. Next thing you know, we hear somebody outside, you know, and I can't remember what he said, probably like, you know, y'all come on out of there right now, or whatever, or something like that. I just remember him... This grown man standing there with a gun.
Oh,
with I think he had his two sons with him that were, I feel like one of them was around our age and one might have been younger, but he had them, and they were standing there, and he kind of like had us kind of line up in front of us, and we already felt bad. We're like, oh, started to realize we were messing with this guy's stuff, and now he's angry. We get that. But I remember him saying, which one of y'all wants to die first?
Dang!
Right?
You put the fear of God in you, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, even as a kid, I knew he wasn't going to kill one of us, right. You know, but I didn't feel like being a smartass at that moment was a good idea. I wish I had, because it'd be a better story, you know.
Right.
I wish I had said, oh, me.
Yeah.
Yeah, why don't you just blow my brains out right here in front of your two kids for messing around with your cheap ass. You know? Because that's going to go over really well, isn't it? Huh? That's going to work out nicely for you. Right? Please do it. Now I'll turn around, get on my knees, you know,
yeah.
Tap the back of my head. Right here, buddy. Come on. Come on. You know?
So he eventually let you go, I guess.
Yeah, he did.
But you learned your lesson.
We learned a lesson. We absolutely learned a lesson. I kind of felt bad about it. I was like, you know, we were messing with this guy's stuff, you know. But I also learned that, you know, if you have an opportunity like that,
to be a smart ass,
yeah. And know you're really not going to suffer the dire consequences the person's going to, you know, call the person's bluff. That's
right.
What I'm saying.
Right.
But yeah, I went back there a few years ago, and of course I felt like everything seemed a bit smaller, as it always does when you revisit things you enjoyed when you were a child. But the weird thing about it is, like, it didn't have anything for me at all anymore. You know, I went back there and I was like, what was the draw? I'm walking through all of this stuff and I'm just like, it's hot. There's probably ticks. I just wouldn't go romping through this kind of crap as an adult at all, ever. You know, I want a nice paved trail that's got lots of shade, and that's what I want.
Do you think you've lost your imagination somewhat? Or?
I guess somewhat. I don't know. Everything felt cooler during the summer when I was a kid. You know, nowadays it's just everything's just so hot and humid, and that's all I have words to describe it, you know. It's and I guess I grew up in the worst way.
Well, it's time to leave the most totally radical decade ever and get back to our own times. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to check out our other retro series, Songs from a 1980s Roller Rink Dumpster. I'd like to thank my guests, Grace Guerra Woolbright, Uncle Jim and Cousin Judy, John Gould, and Terrence Boyce. In the Corner, Back by the Woodpile podcast is produced by A Closet, A Pocket, and A Suitcase. You can email us at spuncounterguy@hotmail.com. And you can find us on Twitter at spuncounterguy. And a special thanks to thebrofisticate.com. I feel like